Dr. Armstrong, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on your program. This is great.
I'd like to begin with the story of how you discovered the St. Olaf Choir as a teenager in New York City.
You must have done a little bit of research.
I certainly tried. Anyway,
I'll cut to the quick on this one.
Okay.
As a boy, I'd sung in the American Boy Choir, and I grew up in Long Island, in New York. I was born in the city, but my parents moved to Long Island when I was an infant, and grew up as a Lutheran. And the associate pastor of the church at that time was a man who also had strong background in music. And the St. Olaf Choir was coming to Philharmonic Hall, as we called it then, at Lincoln Center in 1972. And he offered to take me as a gift. He said, after singing that boy choir, you would love the sound of this choir, its purity of tone, blah, 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 blah. I had already bought tickets to go and hear the Moody Blues at Madison Square Garden with friends of mine. And unbeknownst to me, the pastor went behind my back to my parents. And my mother came to me and said, I understand you've been given an offer of tickets. And I said, yeah, but I bought tickets for blues and out of my own money. And the short was, mother got her way. I ended up going to the concert with Pastor Hawk at Lincoln Center. We got in, we took the same Long Island Railroad to Penn Station. My buddies went up to the garden. We hopped a cab up to Lincoln Center, and he kept saying, he had told me before, the choir never sings with instruments. So I saw on the stage a little Porter Teef organ and a string bass on its side. The choir walked out. The conductor walked out, and he said, Dr. Chris Johnson looks shorter. He must be dyeing his hair. Well, it was Kenneth Jennings' first tour to the East Coast, and one of the things that Dr. Jennings began as he assumed tenure of this choir, leadership of the choir in 1968, was to do more historical performances of work. So they were using that string bass and the Porter Teef organ for the Bach motet they were doing that year, Jesu meine Freude. So that was my first exposure. And then about a year later, year and a half later, I was at a Lutheran college fair, really not looking at St. Olaf at all, but the two or three colleges I was looking at had lines. I hate lines. I hate traffic jams. I hate lines. And finally, in the third round at the St. Olaf table, where the admissions person was there like the Maytag repairman with no business, he finally said to me, you seem to know something about the school. You keep coming back. And I said, what do you know? He said, oh, yeah, I think you have that choir that sings with those purple, funny purple robes or something. He said, oh, you've heard the choir. He said, yeah, I heard them last year. He said, what do you think? Oh, they're okay. And a year later, I ended up matriculating as a student at St. Olaf, and I had four good years here. And then in 1990, I had the good fortune of being named to the faculty to follow Dr. Jennings as conductor of the St. Olaf Choir.
And
so 29 years later, you and I are here talking.
I noticed on the PBS interview that one thing you asked the St. Olaf representative was, how many other black students are there at St. Olaf's?
You really did do your homework, didn't you?
I did. Could you say more about that?
Yeah. Well, it's ironic. Yesterday morning, the St. Olaf Choir returned to St. John's Lutheran Church, which is where the choir had its origins. It was really the St. John's Lutheran Church choir that F. Mealis was conducting at the time. But in 1912, when he was asked to bring a program to Iowa and to Illinois, sacred program, he realized he had more people from St. Olaf in the choir than townspeople, and that's when it was renamed. But I saw that gentleman, Bruce Moe, who was then the director of admissions, and his daughter was in my first 3 years here as conductor. She was in the choir, Carolyn. And I saw them both yesterday morning, and I met his grandchildren. I said, well, your grandpa's the reason I came. And Bruce's answer, you know, I'd been going through and looking at schools both in the East Coast and some in the Midwest. And you see the stats and everything. And I thought, I'm going to just ask him a question that, you know, if he gives me the stats, and I know he's just, you know, he's full of it. And when I asked him, so how many black people go to that school? And he looked at me very earnestly and he said, you'd make one more. And I thought that was an honest answer. Like, this is how this man deals. Maybe this is a place I really should look at. And so it was his honesty. And when I came here, my parents had raised my brothers and I to not judge people on outward appearances, to judge people by the content of their heart and mind. And when I came here, though, everything was white on this campus. The buildings were white. The people were white. Even the food that I ate that day, which I still remember, Swedish meatballs, mashed potatoes, and cauliflower were white. But the values that this community had then and I still think strives to hold today is about the judging people for the quality of their hearts and their minds. And it's the reason I've enjoyed being here for 29 years. I don't enjoy winter that much, but the quality of human beings that I get to work with. And I think no place is perfect, but this community strives to live out lives of worth and service to others. And that's what, even through these concerts in song, we try to bring a message of hope, a message of love, a message of justice to all people.
You literally are the person from 1990 to 2019 to bring the chorus into the 21st century, but also figuratively, you've expanded its repertory. Could you say more about that?
Yes. Well, thank you. Dr. Jennings had already started to open the doors to, I think, to a more global repertoire, especially music of Asia, as he toured with the choir to Asia in 1986 and 1988. But I came at an opportune time. I came at the point when we were seeing the collapse of the Soviet Union. So Eastern Europe was finally being open to us. An organization called the International Federation of Choral Music had been established in 1982 and held its first World Symposium of Choral Music in 1987 in Vienna. And that happens every 3 years. And I've been involved with a number of these. I've attended every one of those. And I've lectured and I've actually chaired the artistic committee for the 2014 version in Seoul, Korea. But the internet coming into existence in the mid-90s, this was a great time to be able to finally have access to music beyond Western Europe. And it's music that fascinated me. My father is an immigrant to the United States. He was born and raised in the Antigua and the British West Indies. My mother's family, my mother hails from the St. Thomas in the U.S. Virgin Islands. And so music of immigrants has always been part of my life. And to come to St. Olaf and understand its rich legacy in the Western choral canon, but also to know that there was great choral music in cultures outside of Northern Europe was something that was important. So the very first Sunday we were here, we sang a Gregorian chant for the communion. We sang one of F. Mielis Christiansen's chorale motets, O Day Full of Grace, but we ended the service singing a South African freedom hymn. And no other Lutheran college choir was doing that at the time. Very few college choirs were doing that at the time.